This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm with the Bacon Brothers, Michael Bacon and Kevin Bacon. Guys, how you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
So you are brothers who make music. How do you guys not kill each other like the Gallagher brothers in Oasis?
Well, our theory is, and we don't, at least not so far. We're pretty far apart in age. I'm 9 years older. So I think that most of that, the scenario of the brothers is more, you know, one was 2 and one was 4, and they wrestled as kids, and they were just, you know, banging each other around. And as they grew into adults, they became fairly comfortable at expressing their differences in a pretty aggressive way. So, I mean, you hear all these stories about the Everly Brothers and, of course, you know, Oasis and all that kind of stuff. But me being so much older, I just don't think we ever had that kind of a relationship. And we have disagreements, and, you know, but we don't start hitting each other or, you know, get violent or, you know, scream. You know, we sort of, you know, handle it in a fairly mature way. At least I do. I don't know about Kevin.
How about you, Kevin?
Yeah, that's what it's like. You know, I think if you have that much of an age difference, it's just not the same.
Okay. Now, you are one of the few actors, maybe the only actors, if I'm not mistaken, who has actually sustained a music career. There have been a lot who have dabbled to varying degrees of success, but you've kept at it for quite a while.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to comment on how everything works out for other people, but for us, it's really, I think, a function of the songs, because we're kind of a songwriting band. Mm-hmm. If we were a cover band, you know, maybe we would just sort of get tired of it and say, you know, is this really worth it to be on the road and, you know, go to a bar and play Mustang Sally? It's kind of fun, but, you know, I did that, and now I want to do something else. But when you're a singer-songwriter band, if you keep writing the songs, it makes you want to keep playing them. And if you keep playing them, it makes you want to keep recording them. And that's really why we're still at it, I think.
Michael, you have been a professional musician since the beginning.
Yeah, almost 40 years. I think that's the math I do.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Were you ever tempted to go into acting, or it was always music for you?
Always music. Can't remember a time that I just didn't love music. And I think I spent most of my childhood kind of dreaming about it and thinking that that really wouldn't be a viable way of making a living. And in the 60s, luckily for me, a couple of things happened. The whole philosophy of do your own thing, and you got to find something you love and forget making money and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we came from a family that really encouraged artistic expression, and a really old friend of mine, who is still a friend of mine, who has a large amount of confidence, a lot more than I had, we got together one day and he said, you're going to quit school and be the lead singer of this band that I'm in. That rang my bell, and that's what I did, and that changed my life. And I gave up singer-songwriter stuff when I had a kid, and it was a disco era, and I just was not making enough money in that. So we moved to New York, and I started scoring films, which is my day job, and television shows. And I thought I'd be up here to sing jingles. That's because I figured, well, I'm a singer-songwriter. I have a studio. And then that kind of work never really came to me, but doing television and films was what kept the phone ringing and still does.
Now, Kevin, you've been semi-successful with this acting thing, kind of a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Was it always talked about that you guys might form a band, that you guys might do something, or did it happen by kind of accident?
Well, a little bit of both, because we would always get together and write songs. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, and then I was playing in some other bands, and I was also backing my brother up on percussion. I used to play congas and bongos and stuff when I was in a teenager. So I was in a couple of bands. I was actually in a band, believe it or not, when I was about 13 called Footloose.
Oh my god.
And kind of prophetic. And Mike was touring with a solo act around the Philadelphia area, so I became part of a band that he put together for a short amount of time. Then we would write sort of for other people to record. We were hoping to land a song with some kind of an artist. And we'd written a bunch of country songs, and we're sort of hoping to shop those in Nashville. And a buddy of ours heard the demo that we both sang on and said, why don't you do a Bacon Brothers show? So he came up with the name Bacon Brothers, and we went down to Philly and just played this one show. After we played the show, we really enjoyed doing it. And so even without going out looking for another gig, somebody kind of got in touch with Michael and said, hey, I got this other club, upstate, where you come play there, and we played there, and it just kept going.
As an actor, recently, of course, in the news, there's good old Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know. Is he punking us?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't really know Joaquin, and so it's hard to know. But if he is punking us, then I think he's doing a pretty good job.
Yes,
doing well. And if he's not, I still wish him the best, because having taken so many hits for wanting to be in music, and especially from the sort of Hollywood community,
yeah.
That's where you have really find the most resistance, I think.
Did you take hits? I'm surprised, because, as I told you before the interview, I saw you guys when you first started out, and I immediately thought, they're great, they're terrific, so you took hits?
Well, I think you continue to sort of be, oh, look, it's a side project, or a lot together. Actually, the thing at this point that I have to say is kind of one of the most annoying things is that everyone says, so what? You just write the lyrics, right? And this comes up again and again.
I find it really annoying. I really do.
It's like, we could kind of get that he could come up with a couple of lyrics, but there's no way that he's actually writing any music to go with it. And, that's, I just think that's always been part of the deal. And like I said, I think that people who want to explore a different part of their creative lives, I encourage them to do so. I just watched a movie that is one of my favorite movies, called The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. And it was directed by Tommy Lee Jones. Mm. And it's got a great acting straight across the board from a lot of really fabulous performers, one of which is Dwight Yoakam.
Oh, yes.
Who is a killer actor.
Killed me in Sling Blade.
He's fantastic. When I see that, I say, well, look, if people have the ability to do things well, they should be allowed to.
Absolutely. Growing up, now you guys grew up in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you were probably exposed to the whole Philly sound. But guitar-wise, who were your big guitar influences? Michael, let's start with you.
Well, my first influence was Pete Seeger. My first instrument was a cello. I started when I was 8. I started taking banjo at 10. And then our older sister, Hilda, was taking guitar lessons, and in those days guitar was in the north was not an instrument that anybody really knew much about.
Right.
And it was actually steel string acoustic guitars were played by kind of lefty liberal types like Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
And it was almost a little kind of a cult, and I was lucky that my parents really were in that kind of vein, and I had friends, some of my friends' parents played, had old Martin guitars and taught me stuff. So I was really very into the folk thing. I love Mississippi John Hurt and mm-hmm. Reverend Gary Davis, Dave Van Ronk. These were my heroes. And later, Joni Mitchell,
okay,
master of the acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. James Taylor, a master. Kevin and I had the privilege of hearing him play by himself, which is a rare thing these days.
Yeah.
We were doing this benefit with the Hard Rock, and we introduced him, and he got him played an hour by himself, and amazing. And the guys in my band, like our guitar player, Iris Eagle, he is an inspiration. I mean, he is just unbelievable. So, I think the great thing about, asking about guitars and stuff is, if you look at my, even though I'd been a professional musician for, 15 years before we put the band together, that my skills, not only in guitar, but as a total musician, and Kevin's, are just way so far light years ahead of when we first started the band.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I think music is the type of thing you can never know enough. But as long as you feel like you're growing and getting better, that's the thing that's kind of the engine for me.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like going out and actually doing it that's going to kick your ass and make you better. I mean,
exactly.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin, how about you? Who are your guitar influences?
Well, I guess the first person that I saw play guitar, the person who taught me my first few chords, is my brother.
Okay.
And of course I grew up listening to Jimmy Page and Hendrix, and I've got a kind of a strange relationship with the guitar, because it's the type of thing that I always wish I really would have concentrated on and really hunkered down and practiced when I was mm-hmm. young, and I think that I sort of have, kind of leveled off in terms of my playing skills, and I'm never as good as I really would like to be. So there is a certain element of it that's a source of frustration. But the reason that I first started playing the guitar, because I was really, really enjoyed playing percussion, was that I would have melodies in my head, but right. I couldn't like organize them. I'd have lyrics and melodies, and I had no way to sort of turn them into a song. So I would sing them to my brother, and he would figure out the changes. So the guitar for me became really like a tool to write with. And today, it still is basically that. Besides the fact that it, you know, makes me, calms me down and gives me an outlet and gives me peace, it's also just something that I use mostly as a tool to write with. And the way that I play is in a lot of ways almost more percussive than anything else.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think of it all, almost like a piece of, like a percussion instrument rather than a melodic instrument.
Now, how do you guys mesh? Because I'm hearing what you guys are saying about your influences. Now, Michael, it sounds like you're more schooled in almost the traditional folk idiom. Mm-hmm. And Kevin, it sounds like you kind of grew up more with like sort of the psychedelic blues rockers. Mm-hmm. So how do you guys mesh these two styles?
Well, in a way, I think we mesh them, and sometimes we don't. And I think that's one of the reasons that the band is fairly interesting. Is more it's more the things that are different about us than the things that are the same. And you know, our band has gotten to be much more of a band. It rocks a lot more than we put it together when we first started. But I still bring my cello out. And we play. I do one song that's really from a long time ago. So I think we're always pulling. And of course, the guys in the band are a big influence on that too, because we've given them much more responsibility. So they're bringing all their musical worlds together and pulling at our ideas. So I think that's the really great thing about music, is when you have the differences are what really rule rather than the similarities.
You guys have made what, 5-6 albums?
We have. This is our 6th CD, but one was a live DVD.
Right.
So this 5th studio.
So and the new album is called New Year's Day. Now, you guys recorded this in a different format than you have in the past. Do you guys kind of work separately? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Have you guys all sent each other music on files and all that?
Our joke was that we could make the whole record without ever actually having to look at each other.
Okay.
So there only really were 2 days we actually were in the studio together. One was background vocals, and the other was keyboard overdub.
What was the decision to work in this way?
Well, it was kind of my idea. I felt that... I'm not going to really take full credit for it. I think the reason we did it is our guitar player, Ira Siegel, just for fun, did a track of one of our songs that we've been playing live. And it didn't have any vocals on it. And we put it, the guitars just sounded so lively and beautiful. You know, we kind of decided, well, why don't we, maybe let's work with that track and start putting vocals on that track. And then what I decided to do is... Let's take the whole record that way.
Okay.
Let's work off somebody's demo, work maybe off Kevin's Logic demo or my DP, Digital Performer demos. Then let's do the 10 songs, and then let's listen to them and either throw them out and decide that was a nice demo process, or say, wait, this really worked out pretty well. Let's make this the record. And I think about halfway through the process, we decided that this really was going to work. So we sort of raised the level of the kind of production
right.
we were going to do on it. And we used our drummer's wife, Donna, is a has an accounting business, and she has a huge FTP site. So we just started uploading and downloading. And in fact, one day she called in a panic. We'd completely clogged her whole system up with all our AIF tracks. But that's how we did it. And, we did all the vocals here. We'd put them on there. The guys would take them down, put it in their tracks. They'd send us tracks of drums, and it's a very, it takes a long time. It was 6 months. It's not like, the record we did before this, we were in the studio for a week and we were done, except for the, sweetening and overdubbing and stuff. So
did you guys feel like the Beatles doing the White Album in a way where, like, everyone's just working on their own? And, because previously I know you've worked at Sun Studios as a band and cut things live. Was it hard to get a band vibe?
That's a crazy thing, is that we had a very definite concept for the record before this, which was based on looking at old photographs of the Stones or the Beatles or whatever, sitting in a room and looking at each other and, playing these things down. And that was our idea, that we were going to do our record like that. And
okay.
We did almost no overdubbing. Most of the vocals that we used, except for a couple of background vocals, were the vocals that we got live. We take a song... We track it 6 times, and that was it. In some ways, I think this record sounds more alive than that one did.
Right.
I don't really know why, but it just has, it feels in some ways more kind of cohesive than the last one. And well, I have no way to explain that.
Well, probably because you don't have a bunch of other band members going, hey, can you do it again? Hey, can you do it again? And then you lose the vibe after a while.
I don't know. I mean, I would be happy to go back and cut the other way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or
right.
do some combination of both. You know, studio, as you know, is an elusive thing. It's a, you know, you play a song live and it kicks and you feel it and it feels good and the vibe is there and the audience gets it and they get the song, and then sometimes you go in the studio and you're just scratching your head, why can't I make it feel like that again? I think this is in some ways the closest we've come.
How do you guys decide who sings what song? Is it whoever
writes
it?
It's the Lennon McCartney thing, whoever writes
whoever,
it sings
whoever
it. Yeah,
writes it
that's
sings
pretty
it.
Much 100%. One time we did a duo gig just for fun at this club, the first place we ever played upstate New York, and we switched that around.
Yeah.
And we sang each other's song. It was kind of fun. Nobody got too excited about it. It wasn't like, oh, you got to do that again. But I think going back to your other question, I'll make this kind of short, but what you're trading in this way of working is spontaneity, looking at each other, wow, we're a band, live excitement, for the kind of concentration that you only get when you're working by yourself, you know, at maybe late at night. Nobody's looking over your shoulder. You have no clock. And one of the things in a recording series, you have this clock thing.
Yeah.
We got to get it done. And so hopefully what we were able to do is maximize the concentration of us all individual. And hopefully that trumped the fact that we really weren't doing it live.
This new album has a bunch of wonderful songs, but there's a few I want to talk about. Kevin, you have a song called Bunch of Words. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about it lyrically?
You know, I was sitting down on a beach, as you can kind of tell, because it's got a little bit of a reggae feel. I was down in the Caribbean. It's like impossible to you know, escape the Caribbean vibe if you're in the Caribbean. And I was trying to tinker around with an old song and had a hard time remembering it. It was kind of the idea that these things that are so important to us mean so much in our lives at some point. What are they really? They're just, you know, a series of chords strung together and a couple of lyrics that are written on a napkin, and then they become these kind of like iconic things. And sometimes they last and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they feel so important, and sometimes they come back around in your lives, and you know, you're listening to the radio and you're sent back into another time when you remember this. And you know, that's, it was, I guess it's a maybe there's something, they're so important, but they're really just a bunch of words.
Yeah. Well, there is a bit of an introspective vibe to a lot of the songs on the album. The first track,
New Year's Day.
Yes, that's a very introspective song as well. Kevin, did you write that one?
Yeah, I wrote that. It was kind of thinking about channeling a kid who leaves home from Philadelphia,
right?
Which is what I did when I was young. In this case, he's going out to Los Angeles, which I went to New York, chasing his dream to be whatever his dream might happen to be, and he ends up working in a crappy job, and he's pining for the days to go back to Philadelphia. You know, New Year's Day is a freezing cold day in South Philly, and they have this crazy parade, the Mummers Parade, and it's I don't know, for some reason the Mummers just popped into my head. I wasn't born a Mummer, I wasn't raised a Mummer, but it was something that we enjoyed when we were kids.
What I've seen it on TV, because I grew up in Jersey, but what is a Mummer?
I have no idea. It's hard to say. It's a tradition that started, I think, by the Swedes in very late 1600s in Philadelphia, where they would go out, and I think they were doing sort of charitable things, going out and raising money for families that didn't have money. And it just evolved and evolved, and eventually it came this sort of indigenous form of music. The Mummers Band probably has, let's say it has 60 people in it. It's probably 30 banjos. These are plectrum banjos, not tenor banjos. And then they have accordions.
Yeah.
Probably 10 accordions. And they've got four or five guys with stand-up basses, acoustic basses strapped to them so they can walk with them down the street. They've probably got one glockenspiel, and they have one drummer.
Okay.
And then they have soprano, alto, tenor, baritone, and bass saxophones. I've never even seen a bass saxophone except in the Mars.
Overall, and it's interesting that you guys did this record separately, you know, not as a live band, but I think it has a bit of a tougher sound than your previous album, the grittier sound. Was that talked about? Was that the agenda?
I think it's more the guys. I think that's where the group is going. You know, we just showed at the Hard Rock last night, which is, you know, that's a real rock club.
Yeah.
And we did really well. I don't know if 5 years ago we would have been able to pull something.
I don't think it's the guys so much. I think it's the songs. We never have an agenda about what the record is going to be like or sound like. We had our agenda this time was maybe the way that it was going to be recorded.
Right.
But we've always tried to let the songs dictate the way that the song sounds.
Right.
And I just think that the songs that are on the record just seem to be a little edgier.
By the way, Kevin, when you got the script to Footloose, did you think someone wrote a film about my old band?
No.
How
did they know? I know. It actually never even occurred to me back then.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, the place for music makers. And I've been speaking with the Bacon brothers, Michael and Kevin Bacon. Guys, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
Take care.